We have with us live in the studios once again, Job Persh and Maria Tomczyk, both formerly with Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
To everyone.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
It's going to be different this year. I can feel it.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's... I just don't think you're sitting on the seat right.
We can always hope. That's what the New Year's for.
All right. So we began last week with the top underreported local news stories, and this week we're moving on to the 2014's top underreported national stories.
Yes, and by the way, there's no way we'll get to all of these, so the overhyped and underreported are on the web also. And Maria, are you posting yours somewhere?
I posted mine on Facebook, and those posts are open to the public. So if you go to my Facebook page, just Google, just kind of search for me, Maria Tomczyk, you'll see them there.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and link to that also. And Jov.org is where I have all of
my posts. And that's GEOV.org.
Yes.
So to get started, the number one on my list, and I think also on Jov's list, is that we just had the most expensive midterm election in history with numerous violations of campaign finance laws. And this happened at the same time that a number of states had passed voter ID laws that kept minority and poor people away from the polls, making it one of the most corrupt elections in U.S. history.
Yes, and also the election with the lowest turnout in 75 years for a midterm election. Which says a lot about not only how media covered the midterms, which is to say they didn't. One of my overhyped for the National was to be very, very afraid in the couple months leading up to the election, because rather than covering the midterms, we covered Ebola, we covered ISIS, and not surprisingly, voters went out and decided that the party that controlled the White House wasn't keeping them safe. Rather than covering how... literally insane the many of the Republicans running for office were, and what the Republicans already in office had done over the past 2 years, would have concerned a lot of people, because a lot of those actions, such as shutting down government, polled very badly. But that was all forgotten by the midterms this year.
Mm-hmm. Number two on my list is half of all congressmen are millionaires now. The median net worth of members of Congress, men and women, is $1,008,767. And, you know, Democrats and Republicans are about equal in those terms, which I think is why Congress felt it was okay then to go on and pass a farm bill with massive cuts to the food stamp program. Many of the folks affected by that were in 15 blue states, mostly in New England and along the West Coast. And I guess because Democrats now are in the Congress are mostly millionaires, they felt fine selling, you know, poor people down the river.
Yes, even though many of those millionaires in both parties are getting farm subsidies themselves. How about that? Also on my list, and this is unfortunately is kind of a perennial, and it ties into one of the other underreported, which is the Republican Party having more or less lost touch with reality on a national and also on a state level. But climate change keeps accelerating and accelerating and accelerating. We had another year of record high temperatures extreme weather events of various kind, and endless scientific announcements that climate change is going to be worse than even the previous worst-case scenarios, and is accelerating more quickly than the previous worst-case scenarios had suggested. And at the same time, we did have another global climate summit, this one in Lima, Peru, this year, and it wasn't nearly the breakthrough that was portrayed in many media accounts.
Yeah. Also on my list is 71% of Americans said that they supported raising the federal minimum wage, including 52% of Republicans and 69% of independents. And then four states and a number of different municipalities went ahead and did just that during the elections, so that now about 29 states in the union have higher minimum wages than the federal minimum wage of $7.25 per hour. So that's good news. And you would hope that it would put pressure on Congress to do something about the federal minimum wage.
Yeah, and the minimum wage is one of a number of issues that has come up over the past few years, where public opinion is very, very different than the public policy that we're getting out of Washington or out of out of a lot of states because raising the minimum wage is an extremely popular issue when you look at polling. But there was a very significant study that came out of Princeton this year, and it was one of several political science studies that should have gotten more attention than they did. But it basically found, and this was last spring, that the U.S. is an oligarchy rather than a democracy, that they went back over a number of years between the 80s when Reagan came into power and 2002. So this is before most of the 9/11 policies kicked in. It was before Citizens United, et cetera, that this stopped. And they still found that what the U.S. public, according to public opinion polls, wants in terms of public policies bears zero statistical relationship to what the federal government actually does, but that what elites want, what the wealthy want, what big corporations want, correlates very well to how those policies play out. So that a minimum wage, for example, what the general public wants, gets pretty much ignored. But what big business wants, which is to keep wages as low as possible, winds up being the public policy. And we see that in a number of different policies at the federal level, which is why a lot of these fights are being carried to the states instead. Because you can still have at state and especially local level a lot more chance of actually enacting policies that the public broadly supports. That doesn't stop local and state governments from also being corrupted in the same way. And we see that here in Seattle with the way that developers' interests really dominate the city budget and you know how the city is developed. But there is a chance on specific issues of enacting change that doesn't really exist at the federal level in nearly the same level.
Yeah. And then an item that's on both of our lists and another piece of good news this year, the Affordable Care Act, often termed Obamacare, is actually working. And now the federal health insurance exchange is also working, too, so that more people are signing up. The majority of people who signed up early in 2014, a total of about 8 million people, were people who didn't have insurance previously, somewhere between 4 and 5 million. And of those, at least half of them were people who had gone for a very long time without having insurance coverage. So that's good news. And the fact that this November it became clear that the federal health insurance exchange had been pretty much fixed and is now working very well. People are pleasantly surprised by how well it's working. And the fact that the increase in people's insurance rates was a very small one this year compared to what's been in the past 2 to 3 decades, with in some years double-digit increases. This past year, most people saw an average of about 4 to 5% increase in their health insurance premiums, which is not a bad rate of increase, considering. And that may go down as time goes. So that's been some really good news. And, of course, if you'd been paying attention to the media, all you would have read about are attacks on Obamacare. You would not have read hardly any of this.
Yeah, and if you're in the Fox News right-wing media bubble, you'd be completely convinced that Obamacare had been a spectacular failure, even though the numbers don't say that at all.
Even though the reality is quite the reverse.
Yeah. So also in the very underreported story category, that protesters in hundreds of cities failed to riot after the grand jury in Ferguson, Missouri decided not to prosecute or recommend indictment of Officer Darren Wilson.
Yeah, that's very close to one on my list, which was about biased policing.
Yeah, that. Well, we'll start with mine and move on into that.
Uh-huh.
That you had this whole meme in the weeks and really even months leading up to that decision in Ferguson, where people were preparing and politicians were preparing for violent riots by those people, you know, all across the country, bracing themselves because, of course, blacks are totally incapable of nonviolent protest. And then when the unfortunately entirely predictable non-decision did come through, you did have protests in hundreds of cities. They were almost entirely nonviolent. There was property destruction in a handful of places. And so you had media coverage that focused almost entirely on that property destruction to the exclusion of the literally hundreds of communities where there was completely nonviolent protest. And even in the other communities, the vast majority of protesters were also nonviolent. And then you had the spectacle when you had a lone nut shoot and kill a couple of New York City police officers, of both politicians and pundits in the media lining up to blame the nonviolent protests for having inspired, even though there's absolutely no connection between those protests and the gunman, who had a number of problems of his own. And then you also had the hypocrisy that was not the media reaction at all last May and June, when you had the Clive and Bundy standoff at a ranch in Nevada that attracted a number of pretty unhinged protesters, people who were pointing guns directly at law enforcement officers for weeks in Nevada. And then a couple of those protesters went into Las Vegas and shot and killed a couple of Las Vegas policemen. You didn't have media and protesters demanding that Tea Party leaders, pledge their admiration for law enforcement officers. You didn't have people demanding that Tea Party protests stop out of respect for law enforcement. Very much a double standard in how media cover those.
Yeah, and on my list, I had numerous police shootings of unarmed African-American men around the country, including the choking death caught on video of Eric Garner, really peeled back a layer to show us institutional racism in the U.S. And a lot of social media jumped right on it and kept going with it, showing more videos of things going on around the nation, people talking about their experiences with police or their experiences with institutional racism, really got the conversation going and kept it going all year long. And then also the initial police response in Ferguson really showed us how the federal government and the federal government's programs to just indiscriminately give military hardware to police departments around the country, whether or not they need it or whether or not it's appropriate for police departments to have military hardware, really helps to support that kind of institutional racism without question. And really made people see that our government and our police departments are engaged in a war against minority people and poor people. And I think that was a very important conversation to start, but I think it needs to keep going.
Yeah, and before Ferguson blew up, of course, and the persistence of activists in Missouri and elsewhere made that a national issue, you did have several months at the beginning of 2014, as with the previous years, where the almost weekly shootings of unarmed young black men were not a major issue. They were considered a local issue, and people weren't connecting the dots as to how this kept happening and the institutional racism that pervades law enforcement all across the country, and the militarization, as Maria was saying also.
Mm-hmm. Having said something now about a war on minorities and the poor, there's also a war on women's rights as well. We saw this year laws regarding admitting privileges, requiring abortion care providers to have doctors to have admitting privileges in local hospitals, plus some very bad Supreme Court decisions, are really eviscerating women's reproductive rights in the United States. Abortion laws all throughout the South in places like Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, and Mississippi have closed just a large number of abortion care clinics in those states, in some cases leaving only one in the entire state open. And of course, the Supreme Court's decision on the Hobby Law case and other cases like it, which are exempting more and more employers from providing basic contraceptive coverage, which really is a basic standard for women's health care around the world. So many more employers now who can be exempted from providing that kind of care to their female employees just really are eviscerating women's reproductive rights here.
Yeah, and something else that happened in red state America that should have gotten national attention but didn't was the supply side economics experiment that's been happening this past couple of years in Kansas, where their very right wing Republican governor Sam Brownback and the legislature there pushed through extreme health budget cuts and tax cuts on the theory that the resulting boom in business would provide additional revenue. And this is a myth that's been going on on since the voodoo economics of the early 1980s under Reagan, but has really become an article of faith in the right wing, even though study after study has disproved it. But now you have a real live experiment of a state that has really severely cut back its budget on the assumption that the money would come pouring in. Guess what? The money has not come pouring in, and now Kansas is cutting back even very, very basic services to the government because they're in a world of hurt financially because they cut back a big chunk of their revenue, and guess what? They've now lost a big chunk of their revenue. Now, you've got Republican governors in a number of other states that are looking at this, and rather than drawing the lesson that, that kind of thing doesn't work, they're drawing the lesson of, well, let's see, how many of these cuts can we actually push through before voters punish us by taking us out of our jobs, which really gets back to the fact that it is an article of faith, not based in any reality. It also lets us know that the goal of this is not to actually grow revenue by cutting taxes. It's to cut taxes for corporations by cutting taxes, and that's who they're really serving because they're going ahead and doing this, and especially after Citizens United, that's where their bread gets buttered, not by serving the actual general public.
Yeah, and two of mine that are kind of linked, because they're economic issues. One is subprime auto loans are really the new economic bubble that threatens our economy and preys on the poor. It's really the hot new thing for banks to go out and extend these subprime auto loans at terribly high interest rates and with terms that make them almost unable for the poor to pay them, in order to extract just a little bit more wealth from poor people and then redistribute it to their rich shareholders. It really is the most awful thing I think I've ever seen. But it also puts the economic system at risk because, once again, we're taking money out of the pockets of the majority of people and for something that really is not a productive reason. They're not able to go and spend it on things that they need. They have to spend it on a subprime auto loan instead, and it really does not do much for the economy. Also, this year Congress passed a budget bill that literally guts the Dodd-Frank economic reform bill. Banks now no longer have to push out their riskier investments into subsidiaries that are not covered by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, in other words, taxpayers. So now they can charge more for those investments if they can keep them in their main business. They can issue more of them because, of course, there'll be more incentive if they make more profit off of them. And because they issue more of these risky investments and sell them, that creates a major risk for the financial system and the banking industry in particular. And because they're doing it in their businesses that are FDIC insured, that means taxpayers are on the hook for another bailout, which is almost certain to come.
Yeah. For much of the year, even though repeated investigations had shown there was no particular merit to it, the Republicans continued to beat the drum of Benghazi. That's with several exclamation points after it and a couple of ones mixed in also. But we had the House Intelligence Committee under Daryl Issa, who had been one of the prime movers of subpoenas and various spurious allegations around Benghazi for the last couple of years, quietly issue a report after the midterm elections that debunked almost all of those claims and said basically that the State Department followed procedure Susan Rice had not done anything wrong when she went on the Sunday chat shows, and that all of the other various conspiracy theories that the right wing had attached to that were basically bogus. Now, despite that report getting very little attention, the House Republican leadership and Speaker John Boehner promptly went around and said, well, that wasn't the result we wanted, so we're going to continue to investigate it, and there's going to be a new committee and a new investigation when the new Congress reconvenes in 2015. So now, obviously, this isn't going to find anything new, but it's the whole purpose of this is to keep those allegations alive into the 2016 presidential election because Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State at the time, may well be the Democratic Party presidential nominee. So we're going to continue hearing about this, even though Republicans themselves have admitted that there's absolutely nothing to these charges.
And then I have two environmental ones to wrap up my list of national stories. One is the U.S. nuclear arsenal is aging, obsolete, and dangerous. Built just after World War II in the pre-computer era, it's rapidly deteriorating now. And instead of dismantling it, the Obama administration plans to replace it with a new one at a cost of some $37 billion per year for the next 30 years. That's insane. And then the second environmental one on my list is several studies this year revealed that natural gas is really very dirty, despite what the oil industry wants you to think.
And fracking as well.
Yes, natural gas drilling, sometimes fracking, sometimes standard natural gas drilling, has contaminated drinking water in Texas and Pennsylvania, according to a couple of studies. Also, a study by Stanford and MIT scientists found that natural gas drilling produces far more methane, about 50% more, than EPA estimates. Also, pipelines, trains, and storage facilities, once the natural gas is above ground, tend to leak as well and are not being monitored by the EPA and should be. So natural gas, which is often pushed as much cleaner than nasty carbon-producing oil and coal, is actually producing a much more potent greenhouse gas called methane.
Yeah, and there's also a number of studies now that show that the economic benefits to fracking and natural gas drilling are very, very short-lived, but the negative consequences, both environmental and economic, to those communities are pretty long-lasting. So it doesn't even work on that front. Yeah. And then the last one for national that I have, and it, just to round it out with some good news, is that the majority of states now recognize gay marriage because of a President and Supreme Court decision, even though they'll go back and look at that in the 2015 calendar. A number of states, even red states, were forced to rule at the state Supreme Court level that bans on gay marriage are unconstitutional. And so you've gone in a relatively short time, a handful of years, from gay marriage being something that was a very fringe issue that nobody thought was even realistic to try and push through, to something that is the law in the majority of states in this country, and probably will be the law soon in almost all of them. That is a remarkable accomplishment, but after the first couple of states had passed gay marriage, it became kind of a non-story at the national level.
All right. So that's it for national.
Yes.
We've still got about 5 minutes. You want to start tackling a few of them international stories?
We're not going to get to all the international ones, no. But I just like to do at least one or two of them. Top of my list is the Senate Intelligence Committee report on the CIA torture, detention, and rendition program. Really affirmed and confirmed that the CIA, yes, did torture people right after September 11th. And what we know from other sources is that the CIA is continuing to run detention and rendition facilities, many of them with conditions that still amount to torture, even if they're not waterboarding anybody anymore.
ISIL. And the international level, became the latest designated U.S. enemy. That's the worstest enemy ever. And amongst all those scare stories, very little media attention was paid to the fact that ISIL was very much a creation of the U.S. government, going back to the occupation of Iraq, when al-Qaeda in Iraq didn't really exist but was created and promoted by the CIA as a way to drum up support for the ongoing occupation among the American public, even though those occupation was going very badly. And then, of course, Islamist radicals were, in fact, attracted to al-Qaeda in Iraq. That morphed into an organization that straddled the Iraq-Syria border. And when Syrian rebels in 2012 were fighting the Ba'athist regime in Syria, the U.S. started very quietly, first indirectly and then directly, arming the rebels, and many of those arms fell into the hands of the Islamists. So we have not only created what morphed into ISIL, but we then turned around and armed them as well.
And we tend to forget, too, that we armed and trained some of the Sunni militias that support ISIS now. And that one of the reasons they support ISIS now, because ISIS is not just Islamic militants, it's Islamic militants plus Sunni tribesmen plus some Sunni militias that we trained and armed to try to fight al-Qaeda in Iraq, plus former Saddam Hussein era Ba'athists. It's a number of different Sunni groups. And the reason why they turned against the Iraqi government is because we put a Shiite exile in power. And our response, of course, to the rise of ISIS is to get rid of that Shiite exile and replace him with yet another Shiite exile, Haider al-Abadi. And also, we should not forget, too, that one of the reasons why Sunni groups are so against the current government in Iraq is because it's aligned with the U.S. government. And the U.S. military ran their own detention torture facilities in Iraq. We should never, ever forget the photos that came out of Abu Ghraib.
Yeah, many of which have still not seen the light of day. Mm-hmm. And the same dynamic happened in Afghanistan, where we put exile puppets in power and then replaced one with another this year. There's been a lot of self-congratulatory stuff in the media at the end of 2014 as combat troops are being withdrawn from Afghanistan, even though we'll still have a very large presence there. But Afghanistan was pretty much forgotten for the year, and the U.S. Dominance there over the last decade, and the war has been a complete and total failure, both from the standpoint of militarily, but also from the standpoint of trying to create any kind of infrastructure and government that extends beyond Kabul in Afghanistan.
And
it's done very badly.
Yeah, and Afghanistan remains the largest opium producer in the world, with a record crop this year, shared about equally between the Taliban and the narco state that we have put in place in Afghanistan and which we support. And of course, much of the money from the increased production went to fund the election campaigns of Abdullah Abdullah and Ashraf Ghani, the two Afghan presidential president, the current president and prime minister of Afghanistan.
Yeah. Ebola is continuing to ravage West Africa, although after people finally figured out that it wasn't going to ravage North America, the media got bored and moved on. All the midterm elections might have had something to do with that, too, since people didn't need to be scared anymore. But 20,000 people have now died in West Africa. The pandemic is continuing to spread. The infrastructure there is what little existed is already being decimated.
The main scandal there was that warnings were coming as early as February that there was an Ebola outbreak in West Africa and needed the immediate attention of the international community, and nothing really was done until about July or August. So the international community completely ignored some very strong warnings about a major Ebola outbreak in a very densely populated part of Africa, and that's inexcusable.
Yeah. Israel invaded Gaza once again this year to very little U.S. media attention and less debate than actually happened in Israel itself. And at the same time, Israel is very quietly expanding its quote-unquote settlements on Palestinian land and making any kind of a Palestinian state impossible on the land, in the field. And again, the U.S. is winking and nodding and going along with it, and U.S. media is paying very little attention at all to very widespread, very systematic, and very racist, literally apartheid policies happening in the West Bank and Gaza.
Yeah, and then one last one I want to get from my list is the continuation and expansion of the conflict in Ukraine really is the result of a tug of war between the U.S. and Russia over the European energy market and over oil and natural gas reserves in much of Eastern Europe. We saw the U.S. send troops to places like Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. They were sent not to support those governments in the Ukraine crisis, but they were sent primarily to protect Western oil company assets in those countries. Russia is the largest natural gas exporter in the world, and their economy is heavily based on exporting those kinds of natural resources, while the U.S. just this year became the world's biggest producer of natural gas, and we're looking for places to export that. Western Europe, man, that would be a nice market, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and then one last one that's on both of our lists is Fukushima, which actually is still a current issue in 2014 and into 2015, and very, very quietly, TEPCO, the energy company that inexplicably still has control over how this is being handled, is dumping radioactive wastewater directly into the Pacific Ocean very little media attention at all.
They simply can't control the flow of groundwater through that site, and of course, as groundwater flows through that site, they can't capture it all. They're letting it all go into the Pacific Ocean, and it's all highly contaminated.
Events.
Yeah. One event that we wanted to make sure and mention as it's going on this coming Tuesday, January 6th, in response to all the various Black Lives Matter protests that have been going on, there is a Know Your Rights training for people concerned about their interactions with law enforcement. That will be happening at the Common Good Cafe, 7 p.m. on Tuesday night. Common Good Cafe is at the University Temple, United Methodist Church, at 43rd and 15th Northeast in the U District. Check it out.
All right.
And that whole list, Maria's are at her Facebook site of Maria Tomczyk, and then mine at geov.org, and I'll cross-post Maria's as well.